This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
All right, I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll tell you if money is tearing Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott apart. And 1 hour from now, I'll bust one of the biggest myths in sports about the NBA. But we'll start in the NFL today. I want to break some news to football players. NFL owners do not hate you. Mm. They don't respect you as businessmen. Nor should they. Your actions are controlled by your emotions, and your thoughts are controlled by the mainstream media, a group trying to bring down the very sport that enriches you. Obviously, those statements do not apply to all football players, but it certainly applies to the ones in control of the players' union and the current and former players with the loudest voices. I bring this up because ownership and the players' union have stated their desire to renew the collective bargaining agreement before the start of this season. If the union's negative reaction to the idea of an 18-game schedule is any indication, the players are going to blow a huge opportunity to make significant economic progress. When you're controlled by emotion and pander for the approval of a group that despises your industry, the mainstream media, you consistently make unsound business decisions. Let's start with why NFL ownership is desperate to expand the schedule. The answer is simple. The league's television partners are desperate for live sports content. Netflix, YouTube, and all the other streaming services have undermined the reach, influence, and power of traditional television. With consumers having the option to DVR their favorite shows and fast forward through commercials, the only thing that truly works on traditional TV is live sports.
Truth.
And nothing works like the NFL. Roger Goodell and his bosses want to take full advantage of this unique opportunity while it exists. This unique opportunity also explains ownership's desperation to put the kneeling controversy in the rearview mirror. The NFL is trying to execute a cash grab from its television partners. It might be the last cash grab TV networks have to offer, as technological advances over the next 10 years might further weaken them. It's time to grab the bag. What's potentially standing in the way is the players' irrational animosity toward their business partners in ownership. Why do I say the animosity is irrational? Because during the national anthem controversy, NFL owners exposed their hand and raised a white flag. When Jerry Jones and other NFL owners took a knee, the collective action screamed they wanted a partnership with the players. It was capitulation, surrender. Billionaires do not capitulate. Not on national TV for all the world to see. When they joined in the pointless emotional lunacy of kneeling during the anthem, that was ownership screaming at the top of its collective lungs, guys, we're all in this together, whether we agree with you or not. It's time for NFL players to make peace and money. It's time to shed the baggage of the past and quit looking at ownership as your enemy. Jerry Jones, Robert Kraft, the Rooneys, and Roger Goodell are your business partners. The people telling you they're modern-day slave owners who every idea you must immediately oppose, they're your enemies. All right, joining the desk now are Fox NFL analyst Sean Merriman, TJ Houshmandzadeh. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Do NFL players need to be less adversarial with ownership?
I don't describe the relationship as adversarial, so I would say no to that. You say they don't hate us, huh? They sure got a weird way of showing they love, don't they? At times, we have to go through the history and the struggle between NFL, NFLPA, and its players, but I will start here. It's a tug of war, and in a real tug of war, you better wear your gloves. And this is going to be a lot of pulling and pushing when you talk about the term collective bargaining. Being a player rep, being in those rooms, you understand there's a menu of items you wish and desire to have and attain. There's a menu that you will never relinquish. And it's that way for both sides. And that's what we're seeing being played out publicly right now. If you want to really look into the dynamics of what's occurring, it's as simple as this. The NFL right now has a lot of pressure on it from its TV partners and its networks. You notice it's their TV partners. We all benefit from it, but they have the direct relationship and they're the ones that have the negotiation. That pressure is to the advantage of players in this respect. You sit there and wait for that pressure to boil, and the NFL now doesn't come to you dollar for dollar. They may come to you $2 for a dollar because they know they have to make these people happy in order to have their successful business, which makes us happy. It's just a continuum right now that patience is a virtue and the players have to stay still and let the NFL play it out.
I listened to your explanation of what the relationship is. And you know what it came to mind? Marriage. Oh, it's a tug of war.
It's a tug of war.
But again, there's love there.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's what I keep trying. The players are acting like there's no love there, and they have a shared interest with the owner. Everybody wants more money. Y'all need to see it as a marriage.
You know, the problem is, and I wouldn't call it necessarily a problem, but when we're growing up, we play the game because we love it. We have a passion for it. We're emotional about it. That's what makes us great players. We're emotionally attached to the game because we've been doing something as kids that we love. Now you get to where it's a business. And now we can't, as players, we can't separate the fact that we're doing something that we love to do, but it's a business. So now we get emotional from it. When we get traded, when we get cut, when we get released, waived, or whatever that is. You got to bench or whatever. The players have to understand that the owners, they aren't emotional. They're not emotional. They don't make these emotional decisions. That's why they're billionaires. These decisions aren't emotional. Guys get cut because the team can save $1 million somewhere else. If you have a guy, you know, I use myself for an example. When I got released and waived by the Chargers, they didn't want to do it. I was hurt. I wasn't producing anymore. Now you got a guy behind me, another guy who can not only play my position, but run down there on special teams. Mm-hmm. He can play on kickoff coverage, punt return. So now you got a guy possibly who you can pay half the amount of money
for the cheap.
It ain't even
and
half.
And he can do more, or more.
Less than half.
So these owners aren't making emotional decisions, and the players are. And that's where I think we need to understand as players, and we need to understand that this is a bit across the board. It's a business now, and if an owner or a team do something with it. They move you, cut you, trade you, whatever the case is. They aren't doing it because they don't like you. They're doing it because it's about numbers and commas. That's it. That's all it comes down to.
So I was a player rep for many years. And so I sat in the meetings when we elected DeMaurice Smith. I was there his first year. You said a partnership. If they really want a partnership, that's a lot of what Marcella said, tug of war, give and take. You give some things you might not want to. We give up some things we might not want to. But it has to be points that you want to make, things that you want. And I think there's two things for the players. You at least have to get one of these two. One, you have to get some type of partial guarantee in your contract, meaning for me, anything 4-year contract and under, that has to be fully guaranteed. And you need to get health insurance. One of those two things. You shouldn't play more than 10 years in the NFL and walk away without health insurance. That should not be the case because nobody, for the most part, guys don't have problems when they're 35, 36, 36. Those problems creep in 45 and after. Right. Your insurance is run out.
Yep.
And so get things that are important. If it is truly a partnership, then we will give them. You look at the NBA. LeBron James said, man, we need a longer break after the All-Star game. What did Adam Silver do? Okay, we're going to give you a longer All-Star break. And it looks like it's a partnership with them. It may not be, but they sure make it look like it. When LeBron James says, we need a longer break, Adam Silver says, all right, we got you.
And so when the NFL players basically say, for safety reasons, less padded practices, less hitting, less contact, the NFL does give in. All I'm saying is I think right now where y'all at with this unique opportunity going on right now with television, you have to, again, it's like if you're in an argument with your wife, are you going to bully her into giving you what you want?
No.
Or are you going to sweet talk her into it? And right now, y'all just need a little more sweet talk with these owners because they're down for the play.
Or no talk, and I've learned this from my own marriage. Sometimes they're going to talk some sense into themselves after they realize their own wrongdoings, and I think that's the NFL right now because this is not a unique situation. Oh, my God, 18 games. This is just the latest situation we're dealing with. The NFL has never taken their medicine voluntarily. They have never sat there and said, we want our medicine. And let's go all the way back to when players and free agency in 1992 and Reggie White in that case. Let's go all the way
Let
to...
Let it go, Marcellus.
Huh?
Let it go,
No,
Marcellus.
No, I'm just trying to show you that this is just the next. You said it's unique. Let it go. You have to make them take their medicine. This is how it plays out. Let's talk about player safety, how we had to complain to get to this place. I let it go because they got to that place. Guess what we're talking about? CTE was never an acronym that I ever used as an active player because the NFL was suppressing medical issues. And then we got to a place where now they're invested in it. Social issues, they've invested in it after you make them take their medicine. Here's the thing right now. The NFL is in a pickle. They know that player safety is still a priority, but they also know that there's pressure for live events. There's pressure for more of inventory of NFL games. So what are they going to do? Hey, we'll throw you guys $2.5 billion towards the cap. But how? What's the details? Are you going to increase roster? So now I thought I was going to get a bump, but I'm sharing my bump with a new guy.
Right.
So that's the conversation that we're not having until you find out and dot the I's and cross the T's.
And all I'm saying, the reason why we keep circling back to this conversation, and I'm not going to let it go because I'm just trying to
reach y'all, is
NFL owners are willing to have that conversation.
On their terms.
Yeah.
Not a partnership is on our terms. Well, it's perception and selective perception. We're guilty.
If you're it's a true partnership, we sit down and we both walk away from it not happy. That's a true partnership where we both have give. Well, we give a little bit, we'll take a little
bit. You both feel the pain.
Yeah.
But you know, all partnerships aren't created equal. I mean, you can still be partners in something and it not be an equal partnership because I can guarantee the NFL owners don't look at it as an equal.
They're junior partners.
You're junior partners.
Yeah. So, silent partners at times. Well,
yeah. You know, I mean, I do agree with you and them being partners with the players. You just have to understand who's going to get the better part of that deal.
Mm-hmm.
And if that deal is still good for the players, then that's when you're okay when you guys both walk away and you're happy about it because you did get more, but they don't look at the players as equals.
And Marcellus, here's the point I'm trying to make to you because you just ran down a laundry list of things that happened.
And this is now on that list.
That happened in the past.
And more is going
to
come.
And again, you get into a relationship, you're like, you know, baby, can you quit talking about what I did 10 years ago? Can we just let that go? Because we're in a new place. I'm not that guy that did that then. These conversations go on all the time. And if the other partner won't let it go, it becomes a major problem in the relationship. And so I get it that the NFL did a bunch of things. But I'm telling you, when history is told or when people sit back and just look at what happened on this national anthem deal, these guys got on their knees and surrendered and screamed out, okay, man, we pardon. We don't even agree with y'all on this. But we're going to get on our knees, give you the $100 million, do all that. That's the biggest sign that they can give you. It's like, let the past go. Mm. It's a new day. Let's now go get this money
and this is
together.
And this is the greatest sign that the players have finally understood what their power really is. That's why there's power in their silence. Let me give you something. It's biblical. You know this about relationships. Stop bringing up the past. In the Bible, it says love keeps no record. You know why it keeps no record? Because let that go if you really love them. Do they really love the players? Is there really love in that partnership? You say yes, I say yes. Is there love for the players? I say yes, I agree with you. You have filed this away as players having angst or issues with the ownership. It's not that. It's just we need validation. We need understanding of our real issues. And before, history has told us, they don't understand the issue until all the pressure collapses on them. So they're using their old tactic, the PA is, and this time they've added a new layer. Sit back and let y'all feel the pressure. And right now, it doesn't seem like they're handling it well.
I just don't blow this opportunity because, again, this opportunity is unique. No one could have predicted what the internet was going to do to television and scripted TV. No. And so we're in this unique deal where it's like, holy cow, live sports is the end-all, be-all. Everybody knows it. Everybody's out looking for their next hit. The NFL recognizes that. The TV networks recognize it. They want two more games because it 5 years from now, ain't no telling what technology will do, and maybe it'll be less valuable. Let's get it now. And so that's why I don't like DeMarie saying, under no circumstances is this in the player's best interest. The overall adversarial approach to the NFL, I just think is foolish right now. Let the past go. When you see a bunch of billionaires on their knees, bending like that, they told you everything you need to know.
But do you have to jump?
But what's going on behind closed doors, though? We don't know what's being said, what's being talked about behind closed doors.
How to get some more money. They're talking about how to get some more money, and they want to.
We see the headlines. When DeMaurice Smith came out and said that we're not going to talk, we're not. I didn't look at the big headlines that was printed in the. I looked at, but we'll entertain. That little, in third paragraph down, they said, we'll entertain whatever's on the table.
Whatever's on the table. And nothing's on the table right now. Why be so thirsty and jump at the first?
Because there's a big bag of money. So, can it get bigger?
You show patience. Can it get bigger?
Who's getting what?
Can it get bigger, Whitlock?
That can all be decided. Right. And it can get bigger. But what they're trying to tell you is it can only get bigger if we work together.
Okay.
We can't wait on you to, the owners are going to figure it all out.
You can wait.
They need you.
Nothing gets done until there's a deadline.
When you start talking about expanding the schedule, the way this health issue has been defined, and everybody's got CTE, everybody that plays football is going to die of CTE, that false narrative that everybody's bought into, they can't do it without you. It would be most effective if we did this together. There's a big bag of money sitting out there for it. Let's go get it. Let's move to Dallas, where Dak Prescott hasn't even signed a new contract yet, but it might already be causing problems. Reportedly, Ezekiel Elliott is frustrated over his contract negotiations and hasn't ruled out a holdout. Meanwhile, Dak's new deal is reportedly Dallas's top priority and is expected to be in the $30 million per year range, which would dwarf the $3.85 million Zeke is set to make this season. My contention is that Dak's new contract is at the heart of Zeke's frustration.
Oh, no, it's not that, not at all. I mean, as a player, even from your camp, your agent, you know that in priority, maybe you're most valuable, but in the pecking order in terms of timing and pressure, they gotta go get Dak first. I mean, he has 1 year remaining. You got 2 years remaining, so we all know we gotta fall in line in that respect. I think this is just a small cry, just to put it out there, to Jerry Jones, who's in the kitchen right now, and Zeke's upstairs asleep, like, hey, y'all, I know y'all down there cooking. Save me some bacon. You know what I mean? You ever been there on Sunday? You smell it? And Zeke upstairs like, damn, I woke up late. He got another year. He got to wait. But he going to come downstairs sooner or later. He just wants some bacon. And I know if I'm in the house with you especially, or somebody like a Whitlock, ain't nothing but a napkin and some crumbs. You know what I'm saying? And he just want to make sure they save him something. I don't think this is a real desperate cry. I think it's just a soft whisper. Like, y'all handle y'all business, but make sure next year I'll be up at that table trying to eat too.
I don't think that the problem, Dak should get paid. I don't think nobody's complaining about that. It's just what he deserves. If you're Ezekiel Elliott and you're hearing $30 million a year for Dak Prescott, that's what's making you bang on that door and like, okay, I'm ready to be paid right now. If the conversation is 20 to 25 million, it's okay, because you know what? When my time comes, they're going to have plenty enough for me. It's fine. It's no problem. I look at it like this. You have two guys that could potentially go on the market at some point in time. If Dak Prescott goes anywhere, any one of the 31 teams, is anybody going to pay him $30 million?
Yes.
No. I don't think there's a team on the market right now that will pay Dak Prescott $30 million. Is there a team right now in the market that will pay Ezekiel Elliott number one running back money?
Yes.
Absolutely. Also, in 2020, and we're talking about mid-level to upper mid-level quarterbacks who will be available. I got a list of guys that's available right now or will be available. Teddy Bridgewater, Robert Griffin, Tyrod Taylor, Joe Flacco, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Trevor Siemian, Blake Bortles, Andy Dalton.
Man, that's disrespectful.
No, listen.
Boy, he got all them.
No, listen.
That's only one name on there.
Okay, I'm
maybe
saying
two.
I'm saying three names possibly in on there.
They're going to get more than Dak.
I'm saying, no, I'm not saying that. But you can get any one of these
comparable?
Guys. No, you can get any one of these guys next year for way less than $30 million.
And way less game.
And still get close to the same amount of production that Dak Prescott can put up.
No.
And I'm not saying all these guys.
Merriman, what'd he do to you?
There's three guys on this list.
What? You saying you wouldn't pay some of them guys $17 million rather than Dak 30?
$17 million? That's a huge difference.
There's some of those guys.
Half of them ain't even playing right now.
Okay, but you wouldn't pay Andy Dalton over Dak Prescott?
No.
You wouldn't give Andy Dalton.
Andy's my...
$20 million over Dak getting.
Flacco and Andy Dalton are the only two on there that you can say, but
Mariota.
Jameis Winston, I'd give him $18 million.
That's what I'm saying. You have three guys on this list that you can pay far less than Dak Prescott, but there's not one of these guys, if you look at the running back list, that you would pay over Ezekiel Elliott. And that's all.
That's still not the answer, though, because this only takes one team.
To answer this question.
Sean been at home doing homework, man. He brought his A game.
This bad homework right here.
Yeah.
He overthinking this one. I don't think Zeke's frustrations are what's going on with Zach. He knows Dak is going to get paid.
Right.
You know that.
Stop.
But when you're a quarterback, you're going to make more than everybody else. So what you make, I don't care as long as I get my part. Because I know I'm never going to get as much as a quarterback.
Ever.
You're not going to get that.
Let's go to Marcellus' example. There's only so much bacon. The NFL has a salary cap. There's only so much bacon. And so if everybody sleep upstairs, but they hear me tiptoeing down the stairs.
Oh, Whitlock on the stairs.
It's like,
I better get down there.
It's like, because he can eat a lot of bacon. And if I don't get down there may only be two strips left for me.
But everybody knows that the quarterback is making more than everybody else.
I get it.
And so you might not like
it. But they're cooking more next year.
It is what it is.
The cap goes up every year. So they're going to cook some more bacon next year. It's just you're going to have to wait.
Like Dak Prescott, last year we talked about this a lot. $25 million was way too much for Dak Prescott. Did we not?
Yeah.
And now... they would love to give him $25
million. No, I know.
They would. Right. So the
I don't
Cowboys,
remember saying too much. I remember saying that's about the range he needs to
the
be.
The Cowboys need to get out in front of this and sign that. It's only going to get more. If Dak Prescott
if they can sign him for $25 right now, I say do it.
If Dak Prescott makes $30 million, within 4 years, he'll be a middle-of-the-pack quarterback.
Okay.
That's how it goes.
TJ, let's keep it real. Let's everybody try to keep it as real as possible. Just be honest. You walk into that locker room September, Dak is sitting on a $32 million a year contract, and Zeke is in that same locker room at 3.8. You honestly think Zeke ain't a little bit like, damn.
I got to get mine. I mean, that's human nature. Yes, he's going to think
but
that.
But again, this whole season, this guy's going to make 10 times more than
See,
me.
See, the problem
and
with
I'm
it
just,
is.
That's no issue.
The next 3 years. Hypothetically, Zeke gonna make $25 million. That's 8 a year. He's looking at it like, I gotta get more than this. If y'all gonna give me the ball over 300 times a year, I gotta get more than this. I gotta get it while I can.
I don't think it didn't enter my mind when I was in this position on both sides. Let's be real. When I was at the top of my mountain, I made more than Bruce Smith. They cut Bruce Smith because they were thinking I was going to be there long term. I ended up going for more riches, landed in the locker room where Junior say I was making less than me. And guess what Junior walked up to me and said? Hey, man, don't spend it all
Marcellus.
In one place. All I'm saying
Marcellus,
is they ain't tripping like
I
you think they are. And I didn't deserve
you
that.
I know. You're talking about older guys
okay.
that have made a bunch
exactly.
of
Exactly.
You're not talking about the guys that are the same age as you, your peers.
But Dak Prescott was a fourth-round pick. He ain't made no money. Ezekiel Elliott was a top five pick.
True.
Okay, but that
True.
We're talking about production and what you mean to the team right now.
What I'm
saying.
You want your quarterback to do two things, win and lead. Dak Prescott does both.
Okay, but
he does both.
Those stats.
You want him to do two things.
We're talking about wins and losses, but we're not talking about the whole entire team contributing to this. So I understand
Sean,
that.
Sean, we can do this with every quarterback. They get way too much credit. They take way too much blame. We can't nitpick and say, oh, we ain't going to give Dak Prescott his credit, but we're going to give this quarterback his credit.
I agree.
It happens on every team where they get way too much credit for things that they don't deserve.
I'm with you, but I'm going to be a contrarian. But a team doesn't look at you and value in just those two columns. They say, are we winning because of you or in spite of you? That's when it gets tricky. That's when
a little bit in between.
That's when Dak's agent has to work.
But that's what, see, just what you said right now, you have two conversations that are going to happen, right? You have Dak's agent who's going to go upstairs and show you these wins and losses, show you what Dak has done for the team. What the team is going to come back and say, okay, well, look at where our defense ranked. Look what Ezekiel Elliott did. So, you know, you're just, we're talking about two different sides of the spectrum and those conversations being different. Somewhere in those two conversations, they have to meet in the middle. And that meet in the middle, to me, and my, from my understanding, is $20 to $25 million a year. That's all I'm saying, not 30.
Last year, that would work. This year, they missed the boat on that one.
Yeah, Carson Wentz set a new standard.
They missed the boat.
With less accomplished than Dak Prescott.
With less around him. I'm just...
Huh?
With less...
You think that Carson Wentz have more talent built around him than Dak Prescott?
It's comparable. Very, very. Very comparable.
We're talking
let me tell you. Got better offensive coaches in Philly than they had in Dallas.
Let me
as
tell
well.
You what they've done for Dak. They went out and traded for Amari Cooper. They got one of the best defenses. They got one of the best running backs, Ezekiel Elliott. They've put everything. They got training wheels on the dude. And the guy that's sitting out there that's saying he's the engine of the offense, I'm just he ain't coming in that locker room making $3 million when this dude's making 30. He ain't going to be happy about it.
You made the point about Russell Wilson. I wouldn't call that training wheels. I would call that a situation that is advantageous for your growth. And it worked for Russell Wilson. Then they finally said, training wheels off.
People hate when I do this. People hate when... Are you really going to compare Russell Wilson?
in slow growth, in steady growth, and being dressed up?
Yeah. Joined now by Fox NBA analyst Iceberg Jim Jackson. Ooh. All right, let's move to the NBA, where top overall pick Zion Williamson didn't exactly light up the summer league, playing less than one half before suffering a bone bruise and being shut down by the Pelicans. Now Coach K says Zion shouldn't have played at all because he was out of shape. And our good friend Kendrick Perkins also expressed some concerns about Zion playing in New Orleans, tweeting, quote, Pelicans better lock Zion in a house because I can hear those good people in New Orleans saying, hey, baby, you want some of this fried gator, baby? I'm telling y'all, I played for the Pelicans and it's food everywhere. You know, Kendrick's joking, but it is. I think it's serious. You know, I've spent some time in New Orleans, and I've spent some time with a weight problem, and it's hard to correct. And so, watching Zion in that summer league game that half, I did get the dude's 25 pounds overweight, and it does concern me.
Some questions we should just skip. Like, let's just be real. We the wrong show to be talking about. So I mean, can you see another show out there with these co-hosts tilting at 500 plus? No, but he got a weight problem.
But that's the key to it. Yeah, you can speak on it.
We can speak on it because we're guilty of it. Let's say this. I think that one, sports media, we're so thirsty to talk about Zion that we're going to use a knee-to-knee contact issue to go deeper into his weight.
I don't
weight
believe
issue.
It was that, though.
What was it?
I think they got him off the court. If you watched him play in that first game, they made the right call getting him off the court.
Yeah, look, he was 4 of 9, had 11 points, three rebounds.
Three dunks.
Steal it. Hey, do what you're best at, do what you're comfortable at in your first NBA game, even though it's summer league. I say this about his weight issue. He didn't have the resources and the time to really apply himself to his body as he's still growing. As we've learned from some of the greats in all sports, whether it be a Tom Brady and TB12, which is a walking evolution of learning about your body and your mind and how to really be one in terms of your game, Zion is a baby who had math and astrology to deal with on top of going to the gym. Now he has full focus on his body. I think the baby fat comes off, and I think he gets in prime shape.
I know this is a cliche, and we say it a lot in sports, or you tell our kids, you know what you don't know, which is Zion was used to...
You don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Zion was accustomed to being able to shake and move and do what he wants, still go play and hoop. At this level, it's totally different. So keep in mind, from the time he left school to he got drafted to the summer league, he was on this world tour doing commercials, doing events, you know, accepting awards. How you balance that with now being a professional, you don't know because you haven't been there. That's why it's so critical once he gets to New Orleans, where I tend to think that things will change a little bit, guys like Drew Holiday, I think Jahlil Okafor, I think Derek Favors, veterans who can talk to him and say, this is what you must do to be a professional. Also, having David Griffin there. Mm-hmm. David was there with LeBron and had to deal with the hype, the expectations, and what it means to be in that position and how to handle it on and off the court. So Zion is now learning, no, you just can't come and hoop and not take this part serious.
Yeah.
He's young. So I'm going to chalk that up to that. But the experience part of it is going to come from once he gets in New Orleans with the veterans and I think with David Griffin's guidance.
Look, Mike Krzyzewski loves Zion Williamson. Oh, yeah. It's important for Duke's brand, the whole nine. For him to come out and say anything is a sign. It's a signal. It's like there's some concern. And Coach K is turned on that TV, I'm sure, or who knows, maybe he was there and was like, whoa.
And saw him.
This is an issue because I'm just going to tell you, if you remember before that game, I'm completely on the Zion bandwagon, and I still am.
Yeah.
I think Zion's going to be a force. But when I watched that game, virtually every time he drove to the hoop, if he didn't dunk, he had trouble just even getting the shot off.
Man, finishing. Yeah.
Just getting the shot off. I'm not talking about finishing. I'm just talking about getting the shot off. And it's because it was like, oh, my God. He's too big. He looks like he's 290. And his athleticism at 290 is not overpowering the summer league. And so I thought the little bump of the knee bruise, I thought they pulled him off the court. It's like, look, man, confidence is the key to everything in any sport. And it can be taken just as quickly as it can be gained. And I felt like they protected him by pulling him off the court. And Coach K is offering more protection. Don't put this man on the court until he drops 25 pounds. Don't put him out there in public.
You're right. Coach K was giving Zion a DM, basically, of self-empowerment and self-help. Basically, they taking you around the world, but they ain't taking you in the gym. And you need to be the one that says, stop. Pause, I need to handle business, priority one. He's 19 years young. Can we remember that every time we open our mouth about this kid? When it's blurry to you in your first game, I remember my first game ever. It was against one of my idols, John Elway, in Mile High Stadium. And I was so pumped, so excited. I didn't do any of the things that I knew to do because I was just so pumped to be in that moment. The clarity comes from the confidence, as you said. And that confidence comes from you being involved, you being around the pros, you being comfortable in a new environment. And once he gets comfortable in a new environment, I think all these things start to go. The green lights, the game slows down. But in one half of a professional game, our evaluation should either be positive or nothing. Because if you say anything negative about him, it's just too premature.
Well, I think, too, just push it forward. I think this is a very good learning experience, a humbling experience for Zion, to understand that when you come into the league, you're not just going to overpower, athleticize your opponent, even if these are not the top-tier pros. These are still pros playing out there on the court. So to me, it kind of gives you all that humble pie a little bit to peel back and say, what am I serious about? And at 19 years old, again, you got to kind of go through this. As a rookie, I didn't have it because I held out.
Yeah,
I only played 28 games. So that excitement that you're talking about, mine was delayed until I finally got to the Mavericks in March. And again, my excitement on the court, I'm running around with my head cut off.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? But I was 22, and I kind of been through some things. But with Zion, again, I'm going to say this, being 19, but having David Griffith, I think, there is the key to me to how now he progresses and understands how to be a professional, which takes some time.
Mm. Well, I've been 19 and had a sweet tooth. And it's tough, man. It's tough. And that's what I think Coach K is sending a bad signal like, hey, man, we manage this dude and what he every day at Duke. And clearly, he's not under management right now. Mm-hmm. And he's been put out there in a way. I'm just telling you, I watched that and I know. We were texting back and forth early on during that game when he couldn't make a shot. Then he got some dunks.
Yeah.
And I'm just it's concerning. The kid has great potential, but at 265, not at 290. All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Most fun you can have talking sports
Whitlock and Wiley, Jim Jackson and Sean Merriman are back. Time to get anti-social.
Up this seating arrangement. What's going to happen?
You know what? It's a different angle. They wanted to see the back. You know
what I'm saying?
Oh, back. I hit the shoulders and everything.
Back. Yeah. Yeah.
We still doing it?
Yeah. Come on. What?
Let's do it then.
You ready? Ah! It don't matter the angle, D.
Yes.
See the shirt. Yeah.
We got lights out, too.
You going to do it with me today?
Oh, let's get
don't be scared. Let's do it.
One, two, three.
Ah!
That's good.
Yeah.
That.
Okay, it's going to be a good one today.
Yeah. What's popping in Twitter land?
Yes, sir. We're going to start off in the NBA, where the rumors being that the Warriors never had plans to keep D'Angelo Russell on the team. Mm. Sounds like that may not be true after all. Take a listen. Mm.
I mean, I know it's been written and speculated, and that's fine. That's what everybody's job is to do. We didn't sign him with the intention of just trading him. We haven't even seen him play in our uniform yet, and a lot of people have us already trading him. That's not how we're viewing it.
Are you buying this?
Yeah, I am, because I think they've had a conversation with D'Angelo Russell, and I think D'Angelo Russell wants to make it work.
Yeah.
And so everybody's going to take the right approach.
Yeah, I'm not doubting any of this until next year, when Draymond
comes
Draymond
up.
Deal up. You know how Draymond was beefing with KD?
Yep.
Because my money was involved in this conversation.
Right.
Wait till Russell and Draymond get on this court this year and see how that plays out. But in all seriousness, they do have a decision to make because Klay will come back this year. Mm-hmm. You got Steph. You're going to have D'Angelo, three max players, and then Draymond. How's that going to play? How's that going to work? It's a conversation next year.
Well, audition for D'Angelo to see how he plays within the system.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And even if Bob Myers did believe that they may trade him, he's not going to tell us. He's not going to be honest with us anyway. So I think it's an audition.
Yeah, well,
ask KD about that.
1 year deal situation. See if this thing work out. If not, he's up out of it.
But D'Angelo got the max. So wherever he goes,
he paid.
I'm paid.
All right, let's talk about the GOAT, Tom Brady, whose Madden rating is only second behind Patrick Mahomes for quarterbacks with a 96. But his speed is scored at a 60, which makes him one of the slowest starting QBs in the league. Twitter trolls chimed in on this with one guy questioning the scoring system because Brady isn't fast enough to warrant such a high rating, saying he and 99% of pros could outrun Brady. Well, the GOAT saw this and decided to clap back at both the game and the trolls. Check this out. Oh, man, he was moving, wasn't he? But guys, why do players care so much about their Madden rating?
Because if they had a Madden rating for talk shows, I would care, and so would any.
Exactly.
Damn right.
Right.
Damn right.
It makes perfect sense to me. I ain't mad at them.
Yeah. The serious answer is because people who don't know the game of football know the video game, and they take that seriously. So you just want the general public to respect you and your game. That's why I think I give a damn.
And then when you're a kid, man, the only thing you want to do, like I always wanted to be on a video game. You know, you had the first NCAA, and I remember my freshman year, they didn't have me on it. I was pissed. I mean, I'm mad.
Right.
But I got on Madden, and I was like, okay, I got the 89. That
89?
No, the 98, that 99.
Hold on, what was your highest?
98. It was a 98 or
99. I had a 93. I'm a Madden legend. Are you a legend, though?
I don't know if I'm
a legend.
Ego, though. I mean, think about it, because a lot of times people play Madden, even NBA 2K, and they play with themselves.
Absolutely. Right.
Okay, so I remember one time after I got hurt, my dunking was like real low. I was like, man, I was all upset. But that's an ego thing, I think, for athletes, especially when kids are playing the game.
Yeah.
And when you're playing the game.
Yeah.
Again, I don't blame the athletes at all.
No.
Next!
All right, man. Let's talk about our guy Tiger Woods, who apparently is a big fan of Brooks Koepka's game.
Tiger Woods.
But the feeling may not be mutual. Take a listen.
Tiger Woods.
Tell you a funny story. I texted Brooksy, you know, congratulations on another great finish. I said, hey, dude, you don't mind if I, you know, tag along and play a practice round? I've heard nothing.
God, y'all have an issue with Tiger putting a story out there?
Do I have an issue with Tiger putting a story? I enjoy the story because it gives me a peek into Brooks Koepka. And it's like, oh, he's really about this deal. He's not going to give Tiger any psychological advance of getting comfortable playing alongside of him. I bet you Koepka doesn't like Tiger putting this story out
there. No, I think he loves it. Anytime a story gets out there, especially in jest, that's in alignment with your narrative that you already got going, the story of Brooks is exactly that. And Tiger gave you another example of that. I think he loves it, but one thing about Tiger, he getting old. Old people say texted.
You be texted.
We're not be like, hey, man, I texted you. Like, I think
Tiger too.
It ain't two syllables.
Tiger was the beautiful girl back in the day he used to date.
Oh.
And now, Brooks is like, bro, you know, you try to text her. You want to go out to eat? Brooks is like, no, bro, I'm good.
He ain't even saying that.
All right.
Back in the day, we could hang, but right now, we done moved on from
it. Man, this is the opposite way for me. I'm trying to get him to stop texting. Like, leave me alone.
Lights out. I'm going to say this. I'm like Koepka. A lot of people get very upset with me when I don't respond to their text.
That's real.
And I get them and read them, but some of them don't require a response, you know?
Don't do that.
No, you know what?
We're not real bad, too. That's why, you know what? We just work better on the show now, because I realize if I hit them and it's not a definitive closing, I need an answer.
Right.
I don't even get nothing. I don't even get bubbles.
He wasn't even thinking about it, dog.
You bad, bro.
All right, let's move to Darnell's question of the day. Take it away.
All right, guys, so NFL training camps are about to heat up, and we all know hazing the rookies is a big part of the experience. In fact, Patriots rookie N'Keal Harry was just on Fair Game with our good friend Christine Leahy, and he pleaded with his teammates not to cut his hair. So I want to ask you guys, is hazing a positive or negative part of sports?
I think it can be both. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think sometimes you can learn some things about your teammates. Are they humble? Are they willing to laugh at themselves? Are they willing to be respectful of the guys before them? And will they, you know, accept some hazing? It can go too far.
And it can.
People can do a little too much. And next thing you know, you got a fight on your hands.
Yep. I think it's the same as when we were growing up, joking and horseplay. Mm-hmm. A great thing, positive, until something goes wrong. And something always goes wrong when you start joking and horseplaying. When you're hazing, you just guarantee something's going to cross that line. And how's it going to respond?
I just remember some of the good days, like of getting hazed. Like at the time, you think it's the worst thing in the world. But I look back on it, and I'm kind of thankful that some of the older guys were you almost like endearment, right? They're doing they care about you. They're trying to bring you into the family, so they're doing things. But there is a certain point that you got to stop, right? You got some guys that are trying to embarrass you because they feel a certain type of way about you personally. So it's far and beyond just a regular hazing.
When I had rookies, it was more so them learning me learning them, having fun with it. Like they would have to get me breakfast and my lunch and carry the bags and maybe sing and do things like that. But it was all in. Also, too, just building team camaraderie, you know. But when you do take it a little bit further, it's like you talking about joking. Man, why you bring out the mama jokes? Man?
There it is.
You ain't got to bring out the mama joke. But that's when it gets too serious and you cross the line. So, like you said, where it can be negative. But more than likely, if you do it right, it's always positive.
Yeah.
Darnell, you're a young guy.
Yes, sir.
And what's your thoughts on hazing? I know I've hazed you. Darnell used to wash my car every weekend when I used to drive.
Every weekend.
Yeah, that was...
only way I can get this position.
That was your audition?
His audition was sons.
But I'm cool with it. I mean, like you said, as long as it doesn't go too far. I know at Ball State, when you were a freshman, we would make the players have to sing the fight song to the rest of the team on the 50-yard line. If you got it wrong, you'd be some type of condition after that you would have to do. So it was all fun. As long as you keep the fun in, then it's all good.
That ain't hazing. I'm giving you...
Anybody up here frat?
No.
Nah.
No.
Hell
no.
That's a different level.
That's a whole nother level.
That ain't a banana.
Now, that right that there is a whole different level.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a whole different level.
I said
right
bananas. There. Hey, here's some hazes. Here's a real quick. All right. The whole duct tape, butt naked with the baby powder on the goalpost, that was like the standard in Buffalo when we were there. But then I got to San Diego.
What? That's a standard.
That was the normal. Like, we got everybody like that. I got a guy like that. But LT, he had to pay for our
LaDainian Thomason
team dinner. $32,000 hazing.
So was mine.
How much was yours?
$32,000.
Oh, we went to the same restaurant, didn't say that. Hit that board with it. Now that's hazing.
That's hazing.
That's hazing.
That's sick.
Before we get back to Marcellus in the game, I'd like to address Richard Seymour's recent tweet extolling the partnership between NBA teams and their star players. Seymour, the retired former Patriots defensive end, tweeted, "As a player who was unexpectedly traded days before the season started, I can't help but to be envious of the partnership and relationship between NBA teams and their star players. Seems to be a lot of mutual respect,
to facilitate deals that both parties are satisfied with. Hashtag respect. Seymour, of course, is referring to Paul George and Anthony Davis forcing Oklahoma City and New Orleans to trade them to Los Angeles. Let me break some news to Richard. Those deals weren't predicated on mutual respect. Brute force caused the Thunder and the Pelicans to make deals they didn't want to do. Had Twitter been around when Suge Knight hung Vanilla Ice over a balcony, I'm sure Seymour would have congratulated Big Suge on the respectful way he fleeced Ice Ice Baby out of $4 million in royalties. Seymour is just one more delusional football player who wishes he was a basketball star and who has swallowed the false narrative that NBA players and owners frequent the same strip clubs and spend all major holidays at the same dinner tables. Anything that bad that happens between owners and players in the NBA is an aberration to be ignored. Donald Sterling's 30-year reign as Clippers owner, that was a fluke. The NBA immediately cleaned that up. The minority owner of the Warriors who pushed Kyle Lowry on the sideline, well, it was a reflex reaction in the heat of an intense NBA Finals series. James Dolan having Charles Oakley escorted out of Madison Square Garden. Look, Dolan is crazy. Everybody knows that. The Warriors' mishandling of Kevin Durant's injured calf. Hey, mistakes happen. The NBA is utopia. Matter of fact, it's better than utopia. It's Wakanda. NBA players can protest all the social media injustices pointed out on Twitter. LeBron can take a knee any damn time he chooses. Well, that's not actually true. Unlike the NFL, the NBA has a hardline rule on protesting during the national anthem. But the players do get to wear cute little t-shirts championing equality during pregame warm-ups. Richard Seymour, like a lot of people, has been brainwashed into believing that NBA grass is greener. It's not. It just has more manure spread across it. Football players need to quit buying the bull manure that the NBA is selling and take pride in the great game they helped build. The culture in the NBA is not superior to the NFL. That's a lie promoted by people who want to diminish the very game that made Seymour rich and famous. Hating the hand that feeds you is a dumb play that's bad for business. Football players need to stop it. All right, Marcellus, Jim Jackson, and TJ Husmanzada, I want to hear what you guys have to say. Does NBA ownership respect its players more than NFL owners?
No, they don't. I think they have a deeper investment, greater partnership that gives the illusion of respect, but it's just because they're getting tugged by that bottom line and the players in the NBA being closer to that bottom line than we are in the NFL. Let's just be real. The first 24 hours of free agency for the NBA was to the tune of $3 billion in contract terms. That's not what happens in the NFL. So when we talk about partnership and which way do you look at it and which way does it lend itself, you got a greater partnership in your sport just simply because of that bottom line.
I'll go back to when I was part of the union back in 1995 when I first started. We didn't have the superstar power to gain control of anything. So the NBA basically ran shot over whatever they wanted to do. In 98, we kind of got a little bit closer. We held out, but we still didn't have the superstars kind of leading the charge. Once the big guys came in and were a part of the union, okay, that sent a different message. So do the owners respect us even more? Maybe a little bit. They respect the power of the players to come together and do some things differently, okay? Having guaranteed contracts gives you a little bit level of more control than NFL players have, okay? But ask Chris Paul if he feels respected by the owner, by what happened, okay? So it's numerous scenarios that I can paint in the NBA where the ownership is still the ownership. They respect some of the processes that we have to go through in decision-making, okay, because the union is strong together and you have your major, your key players, superstars that are leading the charge. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's any more respect. They respect the avenues in which they have to deal with the players, but I don't think from an individual perspective it's higher or lower than what we see in the NFL.
It's the perception. The perception is that, yes, the NBA owners do respect his players more, but it's what you just said. LeBron is so popular, and he's basically shown everybody how to take control of your own career. And because they have guaranteed contracts, you can see a Kawhi force his way out of San Antonio. Anthony Davis forced his way out of New Orleans. Paul George, after signing a contract, I don't want to be here no more. I want to go play for the Clippers and get my head beat in, but that's another story.
Whoa, 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 whoa. There you go.
And so the perception of it is, I said it earlier, LeBron says, oh, man, we need a longer break after the All-Star game. Adam Silver gives it to him. So the perception is, oh, yeah, they respect their players more, but it's just at the top. It's the best players. Mm. I mean, when you look at all the rest of the players, they can't do that. If the 15th guy on the roster says, oh, man, we need a longer break, boy, if you don't shut up. But LeBron says it because his name carries so much weight. Okay, we'll meet you halfway with this one, LeBron. And so it's the best players. It's the less than 1% of guys that can kind of control their own destiny and do what they want to do.
Anybody here an only child?
No.
Or again, there was just me and my brother. Mm-hmm. And, again, as opposed to a family that may have six kids, you may get more attention when there's only 15 of you on an NBA team as opposed to 53.
Yeah.
Again, one owner, 53 employees. One owner, 15. You're going to feel more love,
yeah,
particularly at the top because, again, it's really only one or two guys on a team where the owner has to have that strong connection, where in football there's 3, 4, 10 guys that are really critical to you winning or losing. There's just more people to service. And so I just wish, I'm just begging football players, we got to quit hating on this game and quit thinking that the grass is greener every place else. It's the wrong mindset, and it diminishes the great game of football in my mind because it's just not true. If you really reflect upon what's going on, there's no difference. Again, everybody says, oh, the players in the NBA, they're so free. Well, the NBA has a hard, fast rule on what happens in the national anthem.
Yeah.
But everybody thinks the NFL is the league with an iron fist over what the players can and can't do. It's a misperception. It is public perception. It's a misperception.
Yeah, great points. And let's unpack it even further. You said combine some great points I want to just dive into a little deeper. NBA is losing this middle class. If you notice,
none.
No middle class. Top supermax, Chris Paul, is actually taking a lot of heat right now because as the leader of the Players Association, he looked out for him, the banana boat, and that level of player. Middle class is lost. So veterans, Boogie Cousins, vet minimum. Vet minimum. Even injured, Boogie Cousins is not a vet minimum player, but there's no middle class. Whereas in NFL, there is a middle class to the point where non-elite players are being talked about, $30 million Dak Prescott. He's not upper class in terms of talent and elite, but he's in that high.
Very, very true.
Upper middle class.
Very true. Very true.
You brought up the fact that your executive committee had superstars in the late 90s, early 2000s, which changed the perception, which changed the power dynamic. And I just went and looked at our executive committee as of right now. And I remember when I played, and I played right after the quarterback club, if y'all can remember.
You couldn't even get a quarterback. Couldn't get it.
They wouldn't even be a part. Now I look at the executive committee right now, Willock, not a single quarterback on the committee.
Drew Brees was the last one to do it.
Right. So the point is, our superstars, and when I played it, you know, Tom Brady's still going, but a Peyton Manning, those guys had their own kind of separate entity in terms of marketing and how the league treated them. You made a excellent point in the sense of maybe we need to put a little more internal pressure on making our stars a part of this process to help us get even farther.
All right, you want to party like a football star?
Yay.
Saturday at the one and only Dre's Beach Club on the Las Vegas Strip. You can join Ty Dolla $ign, that dude Marcellus Wiley, and the entire Speak for Yourself crew at the pool party of the summer.
Can't
for
wait.
Tickets or more information, visit dresgroup.com.
Can't wait. It's going down.
All right, welcome back. Yep. Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Houshmandzadeh and Sean Merriman are back. TJ and Sean will both be in Vegas with us. All right, let's return to the NFL, where Golden Tate just appeared to take a shot at the quarterback he won a Super Bowl with, Russell Wilson. In an interview with a local Detroit TV station, the former Seahawk and Lions receiver claimed that Matthew Stafford is actually the best quarterback he ever played with, explaining, quote, "The guy can flat out play. He's tough. His attitude is amazing, and he just wants to play ball. For me, I have nothing but praises for him. It's almost unfair that he's such a good player and doesn't have the playoffs or a ring to show for it." All right, the question here is, does Golden Tate really believe this, or is he taking a shot at Russell Wilson?
He really believes this. He really believes this. And this is a dynamic that happens in our business, in our world of commentating, that you may know something, but to go out there and say it is going to get a reaction, especially if it's not validated with tremendous success, championships, or is premature. I know that as a Clippers fan. Trust me, I hear it all the time, and I hear this from former players. So many guys have come up to me, former Lions, other guys who played against Matthew Stafford, said, dude, the best, the one T-shirt for T-shirt, put them all together, is Matthew Stafford. And I've been hearing that for years. I mean, it felt like a decade of hearing that. And when he said this, I took it exactly where those guys were saying it. But I was like, finally, a real active player is giving them that kind of respect. So I just think it's the dynamic that if anyone else will come out with this, we're going to shoot it down or think that there's another intention. But I believe what he's saying.
I think he's taking a shot. I think he's taking a shot at him. And you're based off wins and losses in the National Football League, period. And I don't care who you are, what you are, you're based off wins and losses. You know, Matthew Stafford probably have a big arm. He's probably a better teammate, probably does more things than Russell Wilson. But Russell Wilson has a ring. And from the stats of touchdowns thrown, passes, yard completion, everything on this paper right here shows that Russell Wilson is a better quarterback. There's something personal going on. I don't care what it is. There's something personal there that he don't like personally about Russell Wilson. I don't know what that is. I don't know what happened between them two. I don't know. But you can't sit back and say that Matthew Stafford is a better quarterback than Russell Wilson. I can't see it. He might have better mechanics. He might do some things better than Russell, but to say he's an overall better quarterback, I just don't see it.
So is he taking a shot? Yeah, he's taking a shot for sure. But he's also telling the truth. If you look at it, Golden State is a receiver. Who would he rather have him throw the ball? Or who would he rather have throwing him the ball? It's Matthew Stafford, because Matthew Stafford is a better thrower of the ball than Russell Wilson is. So he's taking a shot. They probably have a little animosity, Golden Tate and Russell Wilson. But Matthew Stafford is a better throw. I was just out with Matthew Stafford the last couple weeks, and it's what you said. Nobody out there throws a ball better than Matthew Stafford. He's accurate. He got a great arm. He has a great arm. He does everything well. And as a receiver, that's what you want. I don't care that Russell Wilson has won a Super Bowl ring. He ain't getting me the ball. When I played with Matthew Stafford, he got me the ball. And so for Golden Tate, that's all he's looking at.
And again, that's a very narrow view that isn't reflective, I don't think, of reality. Look, Dan Marino threw the best ball I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But no one thinks he's better than Joe Montana. No one thinks he's better than Tom Brady. And Dan Marino, and so again, Matthew Stafford can throw the hell out of the ball. That's great. And he puts up 5,000 yards every season.
But for Golden Tate, you look at it. He played 4 years with Seattle. He played 4 years with Detroit. He had 165 receptions with Seattle, 372 with Detroit. So if I'm Golden Tate, of course Matthew Stafford is better. I touched the ball a lot more. Yep. And that's his perspective because he was a receiver.
And it's not so limited as we were talking yesterday. Players look through the lens of talent first. Like, we're going to look and say, who's better? Because we know that the owners and because of the draft and the business, it's all these pieces getting mixed and matched together. But we know when we get out there, oh, he's better than him. We just simplify it. We're evaluators on a different playing field. And no shot at Russell Wilson. But if Matthew Stafford had the Legion of Boom and that defense,
Pete Carroll,
then Marshawn Lynch or Pete Carroll, and as a player, we're like, if you give him that, and let's see him go throw this ball.
Let me tell you what Russell Wilson's defenders would say, and maybe even Russell Wilson. That Matthew Stafford would throw more interceptions than me, make more dumb plays than me, wouldn't do the things that I do with my legs that help this team.
Right.
Wouldn't, because again, there's a part of managing the game and allowing your defense to win games.
True.
Rather than trying to put it all on your own individual shoulders. And so you're right. You can transfer all that talent over to Detroit, but with Matthew Stafford manage the situation in the games as well as Russell Wilson did. Russell Wilson's in control of his ego and a bunch of other things, a lot of discipline. The personalities of Richard Sherman and these guys, if they came at Matt Stafford the way they came at Russ, would he be able to stand in there confidently and continue to play and things like that? So there's a lot of intangibles that I think that go along with Russell Wilson and that a lot of other quarterbacks get credit for, but we keep trying to deny Russell Wilson. Uncle Jimmy's here.
Your thoughts?
Most definitely. Not just Uncle Jimmy. Something else in front of him.
Why, Uncle Jimmy.
Come on, man. You know what time it is, man. Big dummy of the day.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, listen to this now. Marcellus.
What's that?
The big dummy of the day go to somebody that seemed concerned for Zion Williamson's diet and the effect that it's going to have on his career.
Right, right. He good at 265.
Now, I know somebody, it don't seem like they doing too bad right now. I'm just saying. Maybe they don't want no pressure.
Different professions.
All right, look, different professions. Yeah, he's come talk. All right, here's a highlight.
You blew out your shoe one day.
From our discussion earlier about Ezekiel Elliott.
Oof.
My contention is that Dak's new contract is at the heart of Zeke's frustration.
No, it's not that. Not at all. I mean, even from your camp, your agent, you know that in priority, maybe you're most valuable, but in the pecking order in terms of timing and pressure, they got to go get Dak first.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, we had a dispute about is Dak's contract impacting Zeke's frustration with his contract. Wake up. your thoughts.
No, it's not. Zeke's contract is based off of Zeke. It ain't got nothing to do with Dak. Zeke knows Zeke better than Zeke. And Zeke knows Zeke ain't gonna act right. Zeke know he one step away from stepping on a grenade and blowing his whole thing up.
Yeah.
Well, you think he's gonna do something and get suspended by Goodell?
He one trip away from going back to the principal's office. You know when the principal say, you come in here one more time?
One more time.
Roger Goodell said, bring your ass in here one more time, Zeke.
And that's the last time.
And not even Jerry Jones gonna be able to get your ass out of this. And Zeke just sat there with that dumbass look on his face.
You ain't right. Why
look,
you
shaking? Man, here's all I'm saying. Look, Zeke, no matter how you look at it, bro, you can lie to other people, but you can't lie to yourself. Hmm. You lie to yourself, you're gonna have a problem. Zeke gonna have a problem. What Zeke need to do is just what he talking about. Sit out a year. You can't get no trouble sitting out a year. Yes, get this money.
Can. Oh, yes, you can.
I don't mind the devil's playpen, but
say
go ahead.
It. Say it.
Look, man, stop lying to yourself, okay? That's all I'm saying. Don't lie to yourself and can't nobody else lie to you. Remember that time on Facebook, on MySpace?
Yeah.
Remember you had that profile, 6'2"? 220, athletic build. You didn't say like you was built like no damn tackling dummy, did you? You could lie. You remember back then you could lie on MySpace, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
But then after the eye test, you know, everybody knows. As soon as they look at Jaden, 5'3", 300. That's why he don't take no pictures standing next to me, Marcellus.
5'3"?
Now, look. I don't want y'all thinking I'm being judgmental. That's how I got hooked up with Madison. Hey, she was on my face. She was talking about 240.
My face.
Soon as I met her, it was no doubt she was a strong 330, give or take a biscuit. But she had that good hair, and she grew on me, kind of like a rash. You know what I'm saying? You know, she just kind of grew on me, literally and figuratively. Gave me a new respect for a strong woman.
Can we talk about Zeke?
I mean.
Please.
Look, man, it's all about character. Mm. If I had to give $30 million based off a character, I'm giving it to Dak. Damn sure not Zeke. You got to be careful who you give $30 million to. I got a little cousin named Filthy. I gave him $30. Talking about he going on a job interview, came back with a bag of weed. If I'd have gave him $30 million, he'd have been out there like Sam Hurd and Nate Newton flipping keys. Now, I'm going to be honest with y'all, man. I'm going to be honest with y'all.
Right.
Zeke Elliott would have been off my draft board when he showed up on draft day wearing that halter top tuxedo on, dressed like he had a Major League Baseball game with them weed lips on looking for the kiss can. That would have been my first red flag. If I'd have been Jerry Jones, I'd have been like, what in the hell is that boy wearing? Get him off. Get him off. Where's Dez? Give me Dez.
Give me off.
All right. Come on, man. I got to get to my approval rating.
Hey, man, if Fox give you $30 million right now, you going to make it to Vegas?
Yeah, I am. Zeke at a 61.
61?
A role player, 23 job performance, 13 all-time greatest,
10 in character, 15 authenticity.
You got him a little high. I thought this was supposed to be the last time we seen Zeke. Job performance 18, not as high as you because
he was the leading rusher in football.
Yeah, you see that last game he played? 20 carries, 47 yards in the playoffs. Hang in there. All-time greatness, though, he is up there, 17. We know he's going to be a beast for years to come. Character, 1.
He's been proven nothing. Nothing's been proven. How can you go 1? Nothing's been proven.
We got video and authenticity, 5. I don't know what Zeke's talking about.
To himself.
We'll see you tomorrow. That's it.
Hell no.